catch. And so just get a good visual of us with our party hats on. We're doing the final measures. We're going to walk through them, I think, in order of the pneumococcal ones, then we'll consider the harmonization, consolidation issues, if there are any among those, and then those with childhood immunizations. After that, we're going to consider what we've learned from discussing these specific measures that might relate to a larger, more formative task about developing population health measures. And then if we have time, we'll close with any last considerations for that larger agenda. So, Reva?
Just as a reminder, as part of the previous harmonization efforts, there are standard specifications for the pneumococcal immunizations. They look remarkably similar in the numerator, and the denominator is lined up with ACIP with the specific populations greater than 65 or long-term care facility or younger with high-risk conditions. So just as a reminder. So the first measure we're going to look at is measure 43. It's pneumonia vaccination status for older adults. This is again from NCQA. This is the percentage of patients 65 years and older who ever received a pneumococcal vaccine. This is another survey measure, and the level of analysis is clinician, group, plan, facility, integrated system, etc. So, Shafi, are you Aryan?
All right, and we also had staff calling in. Do we have NCQA staff on the line yet? It might be in process. All right, well, I mean, this is, as Reva described it, it's a survey measure, and it asks about pneumococcal vaccine, and whether or not they've had it.
I believe Amir was the primary discussion, but this measure was reviewed by folks on the rest of that work group. Jackie or Linda, do you have any comments? We'll see where Amir disappeared to. Or Jason? This is the survey measure. Yeah, this is what's up here. Well, use your microphone. And that's measure 43. Where did Amir go? If you'd like, we can wait until Amir comes back.
If he's prepared, we want to just focus.
I don't see a lot of the points there, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I just have it up here. I'll look at the.
Did we get an acknowledgement from Rufus? Rufus, are you hearing us?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I looked at this briefly, and I didn't have any issues with it. I thought it looked straightforward.
Yeah, so there's one study, a cohort study coming out of Canada, that found that the use of PVV did not significantly reduce risk of death or subsequent hospitalization, but that's an outcome. One thing I'd like clarification on is the valence of these different pneumonia vaccines that we're considering. I'm assuming that all of these in this series of measure proposals are the valence 23, even though sometimes they cite studies that are valence 7. I don't have enough expertise about vaccines to know if that makes a difference or not. I'm assuming it does. I mean, basically, valence 23 is 23 different immunizations in one shot.
23 valence is the one that's recommended currently for this age population. There's discussion about, actually there's now a 13 valence vaccine that may in fact be better, but ACIP has not yet voted on that.
Any concerns about this measure?
I think it's for for consistency, there is a standard specification for pneumococcal vaccine, so I guess you'd want to know that it is aligned.
And it is vaccine, it is for 23.
I didn't have any issues either. It looked like it was aligned well with the standard specifications.
One question is, the population is just the age 65 and older. It does not address other populations for which the vaccine is indicated. What's the survey vehicle typically used for this?
This is an HOS measure.
So there, we might need to come back to that issue when we've discussed all the pneumococcal vaccines.
So this is just looking at the population over 65, not looking at the risk populations from 5 to 64 that it's recommended for. So why would we not want to have this be an inclusive vaccination that's stratified?
Well, sir, that's the issue that we'll discuss once we discuss all the pneumococcal vaccines.
Okay.
Any other comments before we vote on this one, Sarah?
Okay. I mean, the one point would be that, you know, since this is administered through the HOS, this comes back to a data source issue as well. So HOS is just administered to the Medicare Advantage population, which is typically 65 and older. And then the other thing I just wanted to bring up is this also has a BRSSF survey, which it is in alignment with. So I'm more of the population health level.
I guess the other issue is this is applicable to the Medicare Advantage population, but how much of that compared to the entire Medicare population, what's the relative utility, I guess?
Well, doesn't that fall into the issue we're going to discuss later?
So let's keep track of these issues that we need to discuss with harmonization. Amir, we're actually just about ready to vote on the first measure, 43. But anything we want to have us consider?
And I was reviewing this, I'm missing them, right?
Yeah, is that?
Oh,
yes.
I was? Oh, okay. I don't remember. Let me just open it up so far. 41, you said?
43.
Oh, 43. No, I think you probably have already discussed most of the issues, group, and so nothing really probably to add. I mean, nothing major.
So you don't have any major concerns about this?
No, I think probably don't have.
Okay. Everybody get to vote?
Can we just see the other comments that reviewers made? Oh, yeah, there was a contradiction there. So the developer, you should realize that you contradict yourself there. 4B1 contradicts 2A1. One says only electronic sources, and the other one says paper sources. Somebody didn't catch that.
Let's go ahead and start our clock for voting. Just we're ready to vote here. So 11 yeses, 0 noes.
Yeah. The next measure is 617, pneumococcal vaccination. This is from Active Health. This is a percentage of patients 5 through 64 with a high-risk condition or age 65 years and older who received a pneumococcal vaccine. The high-risk conditions laid out are the same that you saw in the standard specifications, diabetes, heart failure, COPD, end-stage renal disease, asplenia. This measure is specified for multiple levels of analysis, including clinician, plan, integrated system. It is based on administrative claims or electronic clinical data, EHRs. Are the folks on from Active Health on the line?
And we do have Lindy Chen.
Okay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure. Just one or two sentences about the measure?
Sure. This measure is looking at the percentage of patients, again, like you stated, age 5 to 64 with a high-risk condition or older than 65 who've received a pneumococcal vaccine. And you can see the rest, I guess, in front of you. I'm not sure what you're looking at, but you probably see the form that we submitted.
Jackie?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so this measure is, as I understand it, and it's not always easy to understand what you're trying to get at, is inpatient and outpatient. So this includes inpatient and outpatient. And it's the percentage of patients in those age criteria. So you're really saying who were screened and received prior to discharge, if indicated. So it seems like there's a whole bunch of things that are just left out of this description of the measure. So, so you've got patients who are being seen, but it's not just, you're not just asking them, did you get the vaccine, and that's what you're looking at. You're looking at, did you're asking them, and you're also, if they say no, you're giving it to them, and then you're including that in the numerator. Is that correct?
But we're not looking at it particularly if they've been in hospital or out of hospital. It's agnostic of that. So we're just looking at everyone who meets the denominator criteria and whether they've received an immunization.
So it's, you're not, okay.
If they talk to our nurse or we receive code claims for them.
Okay, so just based on administrative data, so you don't get into any of that. It's just yes, no. They've
yeah,
got it.
Or if they talk to one of our nurses and they told us they received the vaccine.
Okay. All right, the other something is 1C14 on page 4, the controversy of contradictory evidence. There's a statement that there is no contradictory evidence, but in fact I believe that there is some evidence that it's not that efficacious. There are some studies showing that they only really give 10% of people actually get protected from the vaccine, so that was not addressed by the developers in terms of contradictory evidence. And in that sense, too, I don't get see any sense of where you evaluated the developer's assessment of the quantity, quality, and consistency of the evidence. And that may just be because the form changed in the time.
Yeah, we had a different form when we submitted originally.
Yeah, so I mean, but that is an important thing to address because there is evidence, there's a fair amount of evidence that's not saying it's not a good use. You would imply that it's not a good use of scarce resources to give this vaccine. So I should think you'd want to address that. But otherwise, the reliability and validity testing seems fine. There's extensive validation rules, extensive documentation of data elements. It's really quite a lot of work to put this one together.
So we're open to regular discussion, Linda?
So this seems to have the same issue about the denominator exclusions as for influenza measure that we just talked about. So they exclude patient or provider feedback indicating allergy or intolerance to the pneumococcal vaccine in the past, and patient or provider feedback indicating there's a contraindication to the pneumococcal vaccine. And it looks to me like, I mean, those again are supposed to be in the numerator, not in the denominator.
Mm-hmm. Any comments from the measure developer?
Measures are also based on what we can do in our clinical decision support, so we don't alert physicians if they've told us that the patient has an allergy or there's a contraindication that they need the vaccine. So this is sort of measuring that population and get it.
But the issue of whether that's treated in the denominator or the numerator. So the other measures we looked at treat that in the numerator.
This is a question of harmonization and the question of to what degree have you looked at the standard specifications and harmonization with other measures of pneumococcal vaccination.
Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't do it. You're asking us whether we should move this into the numerator. I know you had, had talked about that on previous calls, that it should be in the numerator.
Right. So people with complications are put into the numerator. People who are excluded from getting the vaccine are put into the numerator. You have them in the denominator.
Yeah, I mean, we could move that population out as a separate group into the numerator. We just break that apart from our
complications. This is Sarah.
My question is actually about the testing results. And so your results were right around 10%. And do you, and I didn't see it in here, but do you do any type of medical record validation of those results? Because it seems like a really low rate, especially, you know, maybe it's just because it's in the high-risk population, but have you compared that to other results?
Actually, we just ran the measures again on our... a 30 million population, and we got a 22% compliance. The denominator was about 1,400 plus college people, and about 300 did receive the vaccine, so it came up to 22%. We still haven't very validated the medical records, because we're getting paying from private school. We're getting information from various sources, so it's not just someone's chart. We're getting it from health plan claims, we're getting it from whether the patient told us they got the vaccine, or they, you know, they implemented information as well into their personal health records.
Also, if they are excluding those people, if that should be in the numerator, the rate would go up then too, right? Because they've got all those people in the denominator now?
Yeah, right now they're excluded.
Any other concerns?
So our recommendation would be?
There's the second page. What we're talking about again is another harmonization issue. I think previously we've been looking at the harmonization or the lack of harmonization as we did previously in the overall endorsement. So just consistent, if your issues around the standard specifications, that is a specification harmonization that fits both under scientific acceptability and usability. So it will factor into your overall evaluation and vote on the measure.
All right, so there are some additional rationales for why it may not be ready for endorsement yet, which is the discussion of the younger age group, the 5 to 18. Are you covering them in some other way?
I'm sorry, the 5 to 18?
Right, 5 to 18.
Right, that's included in the denominator.
All right. I guess I'm like...
It says 5 to 64 with high-risk condition and then over 65.
Whose comment was that?
I think it might be
Jason or Linda, Jackie, Amir?
Might be mine.
Okay. Can you clarify a little bit what the issue was?
I didn't see that they were including all patients. Well, why not include all patients? Why are you just looking at the high-risk patients? Because it's recommended for the 5 to 18 group, right?
Right, our denominator has both age 65 and older as well as those 5 to 64 with the condition.
Okay.
It's on page 8 and 9.
But this is also a childhood immunization too, right? Children get this. The younger group get it. They do not.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not in the CDC recommendation?
Not even so powerful. I don't think so. I don't think so. We can pull it up pretty easy, though.
What are you looking for?
Right?
Okay.
We're just clarifying what the evidence says in the ACAP. I think we're okay.
Okay.
So I'm still left wondering, does this or doesn't have specifications in terms of the ability to see enumerator exclusions?
As it's written now, it doesn't. So they have to, we can say that other elements of it, well, we should probably see it again because the testing is based on the faulty denominator, and so that means that the testing results are also going to be different.
I think we need to vote on what's presented to us. They would have the same option that PCPI would if they wanted to reformat the measure, reconstruct it, and bring it back addressing these issues. But I think at this point, what we really need to do is look at what's put in front of us.
So I think we're ready to consider this measure for a vote. So the vote is 9 no, 4 yes.
So for the sake of active health management, that was primarily, the no vote was primarily related to the fact that it did not match the standard specifications around having the transparency in the numerator details. So, again, if you want to reconsider that, we'd be happy to follow up.
Okay, yes, we can take that back. We can change the measure and work on that.
And I suggest also discussing the contradictory evidence, too, in your reapplication.
Okay. The next measure is 1653. This is pneumococcal immunization for hospitalized patients. This really is very similar to the flu vaccination measure we saw this morning. Again, we don't have our developer on the line, but again, this was a measure that was done in pneumonia patients, and again, you know, why a narrow slice, broaden it to everybody that's applicable, and so this is the revised measure brought back to us, and Amir, I think this was yours.
I think without getting into the issues that we have already talked about in terms of measures and harmonization, my main concern with this measure was I felt like something that I voiced this morning that the denominator I'm struggling with a little bit because I think what's happening in the hospital is if you're going to ask for definitive documentation of vaccination rather than patient self-report. And this morning we actually did approve many of the measures where patient self-report was being used, right? And I think it's really important that we keep that in mind. And if a patient self-report does say that they have been vaccinated in the past, they should be excluded from the denominator. Because what currently is going to end up happening is that if you're going to ask for definitive documentation, most of the hospitals I feel like is that they're double and triple vaccinating folks when it comes to pneumococcal vaccination, and especially, and without getting into the nursing home patients and the issues with that, many of them cannot give the histories and rely on family members later on to say that, well, yes, they were vaccinated elsewhere. So it's more of an issue of, I felt like that the denominator needs to very clearly say that if a patient self-report says they have been vaccinated in the past, maybe they need to be excluded.
The standard specifications include patients who are
immunized or have been immunized in the past. So they are counted as patients who are immunized. So we know that their vaccination status, rather than excluding them from the denominator, because then you lose track of those patients.
Okay, so if I look at it correctly, this measure, if the patient said that they have been immunized in the past, they will not be, they will get credit for it?
Okay,
then I'm okay, because that's how I didn't read this measure. Then I don't have a problem. Because that's not my read was of this measure, at least, and I looked at it. Because in the denominator exclusions, the way it has it is patients who expire, the ICD, blah, 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 blah. I'm not seeing that. Maybe I missed
that. The numerator statement, I think it's not as explicit, and that's perhaps something we can ask for a clarification, but it's inpatient discharges who were screened for status and received the vaccine prior to discharge if indicated.
That exactly. So the way it reads right now is the problem the way it's being interpreted.
Right.
Is there things that you need definitive documentation?
So down to numerator details. It says the following patients are included in the numerator. Patients who receive the vaccination during hospitalization, patients who receive the vaccination any time in the past, patients who were offered and declined during this hospitalization, and patients who have the word's contraindication, or allergy sensitivity to the vaccine, blah, blah, blah. This is under numerator details 2A1.3.
Okay.
So tell me if this is something you want to discuss later. But this is that idea of saying the same things in the same way. So if they're quoting directly from the specification, then we can say it meets the specification.
Right.
But if they interpret the specification, and so this is really for all the developers, interpreting the specification creates problems for everybody.
Yeah.
So what I heard from Helen before is that that's not a rule they're going to make, but that's certainly something that can be said. If you want your measure to have an easier go, that that's in review, that's what you would do.
And given it's the same developer for the pneumococcal, so the influenza and the hospital, we should make sure those numerator details line up as well.
That would be acceptable to cite what's in the specification and then say we operationalize the specification this way, and then you put all the things that were there. But if you don't state that you're meeting the specification and we have to sift through it, and then we might not understand what you mean, and then you get all these kinds of problems.
Any other points related to the vote?
So I was reading the numerical detail. Sorry, it took me a little while to find this information. So I'm still not seeing it that if it stays anywhere, the patient is self-reporting that they have been vaccinated, then they don't have to be vaccinated. As I said, the problem is with the interpretation. Right now, the way the hospitals are using it is a patient is saying, yeah, I may have gotten, maybe I got it, they're getting vaccinated.
I think it may be, and this may be a question back for Oklahoma, is I think it may be that there's a lot of it's unclear what "if indicated" means.
How about that?
So I think that it's going to need to be a bit more clear. Because I think the fact that all those things are in the numerator details to me implies that they are going to, in fact, be, so they specifically have under numerator details, you've received it any time in the past. So I think that automatically means it's a numerator, it'll be in the numerator along with it. But I think given the overuse of vaccines, I think it's a really important parameter.
I think you're bringing up possibly one of the unintended consequences that perhaps to be sure that you hit the performance targets, you just vaccinate everybody and, regardless of whether they need it or not sort of thing. And I think you're raising a concern we've seen with other measures that are similar to as an unintended consequence of the measure.
And the only reason is an anecdotal problem, or maybe if your own practices you may have seen it, but I'm seeing it at hospital, the patients are there. We just did it, and we saw the patients were getting extra vaccination, or, there is definitely overuse going on.
So, Helen, how do we handle those? I'm sorry, sir.
Can I just make one more point, and that's on their testing results. They're already showing performance at 98.6 and 97.6%, so my question would be, what's the opportunity for improvement, or is this actually showing that overuse issue, and that's how it's captured?
Remember that the testing data was done only on the population of patients with pneumonia and not the entire hospital population.
Okay, then that begs another question, that if NQS is no longer doing time-limited endorsement, I mean, shouldn't we wait to see testing results or something on this?
Well, our testing requirement is it's okay to test on a subset of population. You know, I mean, we try and make the testing requirement as flexible as possible and not be overly prescriptive. And so one of the things that's allowed is being able to test on a subpopulation.
What it really is NQF allows testing at either the measure of the data element level or the score. And in this instance, I think the data elements are the same. They've just brought in the population. I guess the question would be whether we would expect there to be any difference in the reliability of the measure. It's a broader population, certainly. I think it's a reasonable question to ask Oklahoma. My guess is they've potentially got some additional pilot data on the non-pneumonia patients that would be worth looking at.
So the point that... I mean, just open it, and then Mike's next. But the serious point about the really high rates, really, you don't get rates like that if you're not having a lot of over-vaccination. So I think it really supports Amir's concern. Helen, is this something that we ask for clarification? How do we handle this in the vote? Is this something we can say that if your assumptions about what's in the numerator and how that's measured are correct, we can approve this? But, I mean, how do we handle this?
It is not unusual to have questions go back to developers that help clarify. So you can vote, and we will get this information back and respond to some of these questions. Again, as we've said multiple times, you know, this is our first pass through these. It's a dialogue. And so raising these issues so we can clarify them and find additional information is really one of the first elements. If this had a fatal flaw somewhere else, though, for which you wouldn't want to approve the measure, then all that extra work is not probably worth the effort. But if that's really the one issue you're concerned about and isn't a fatal flaw for the measure, but you really want to be better informed about it, you know, you can go ahead and make your decision, and we can get that information. We'll go get it.
Michael's next, and then Jackie.
It's basically a philosophical question about these high rates for vaccines and preventive services in general. I think that people in preventive medicine think that the reason that we're doing so well is because we've been paying attention to this, and that if we stop paying attention to this by not having a measure, we would drop off. So even though these numbers may not reflect the general picture, I think it's a philosophical question we have to think. How much weight should we give to that for these preventive measures?
And I didn't hear anybody arguing for not continuing to measure this. I think that was being used as evidence that there's probably over-vaccination going on to get to that higher level.
NQF does have an option. We put it forward this past year that for measures that are otherwise...
But it's a variation of an old measure, isn't it?
Let me just finish my statement. We're just making a technical point. That's probably true, but we have created something called reserve status. Reserve endorsement. So for measures that are otherwise reliable, valid, et cetera, really important, but at those really, really high thresholds of performance, they can be moved into that reserve status, meaning people can periodically go back to them and do surveillance. At the next 3-year window, we can reassess whether it remains at that high performance or if periodic surveillance would suggest that actually exactly that decrement occurs. There's very little in the health services research literature at all, a tiny little bit I've seen from the VA about whether or not performance actually falls. When you kind of take your eye off of it, I'd be curious if Matt or Sarah have any experience with this, but it's a really big issue. So we've at least for now tried to move some of those into reserve status. Rita's point is it's technically a new measure because it's an expanded population. But again, I think the bigger issue is we don't actually know what the numbers are, and I think we need to get that from Oklahoma.
There may be a typo in both the brief description of the measure and in the denominator. In the denominator statement, so you've got the criteria say 5 to 64, you've got 6 to 64 in both places. So that's, I don't know if that's just a typo.
So as we approach a vote for this, Sarah, your cards are left over? Or okay. As we approach a vote for this, Helen, could you restate for us the criteria for how we might consider the concerns here?
I think there's really two separate issues. The first is that the high level of performance that they provided to us is only in patients with pneumonia, who you could argue certainly probably have a much higher rate of vaccination because they're in there and you want to make sure they get vaccinated or have been vaccinated. When you're going to the broader population, my guess would be the level is probably not as high. but you sure need to know that, and I think we need to know that really in advance of endorsing this measure. We don't know what current rates of performance are for the general population. If, in fact, it remains equally high, if they can share with us that it doesn't actually matter in the general older population, we're still shooting everybody up as they walk in the door, then I think we would need to consider whether it could be in the reserve step.
Actually, my question was about the other issue, about we think that the things that are in the numerator are probably being measured appropriately, but we just want some clarification of that. I guess you're suggesting that we include how concerned about that we are as whether that bumps us over from a yes to a no, or how do we handle that issue?
I think that's the committee. How much do you feel like you can't really assess this measure without knowing what the current levels of performance are? Importance to measure report is a must-pass criterion. If you don't actually know the measure gap, and I was actually just looking to see whether they provided anything from the literature, it doesn't have to be from their measure per se, but, you know, what is the known measure gap in terms of performance?
So what we did this morning, do you think this will fall in the criteria of Cable is going to get some more info and I feel like we're doing it with a lot of measures. We're going to have a busy February meeting.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you my larger concern with this group is if this was the main task of this group, I would be in favor of that. I think we have other tasks that are really going to take a fair amount of energy, and we've at the balance of our energy, we had without any advanced prep, really, we had an open discussion of a large new area that I think we think is important that we want this committee to address. And so I think we need to do the right thing here with each measure and not gloss over and push things on. But also, this is not the only task of this committee. I would say it's not the most important task. It's not the unique task of this committee. Others could do this. Others could do this work, other committees. But, okay, that's a personal opinion.
One comment is this aspect of these measure evaluation is going to be moving forward. You're not going to be seeing any of this in February. Okay, so this is moving forward directly after this. We're going to wrap it up over the next month or two. The other thing is you can make your vote conditional on review of that data, the information from Oklahoma. You know, that there is an opportunity for improvement in a broad population. Hello, yeah, who's on the phone?
I don't know, I think our lines are caught here.
Okay. Yeah, Rufus? Thank you. Okay, so you can make your vote conditional on looking at broader, you know, data, see what they've got, and clarification on the numerator, specifications to be sure we've got it, and perhaps maybe clarify the language that makes it more crisp in terms of what their intention is.
I want to go back to the question about performance gap, because as Helen says, they say the most recent national CNS rate is 93.3%. Is there a sense generally of how large that performance gap needs to be to say it's, you know, it's large enough? I mean, that seems like a pretty small performance gap to me.
Some of it depends on how large the overall population is. So, I mean, it could be a significant opportunity for improvement just given the number of hospitalized older patients. But, again, that's a judgment call. We don't have a specific threshold for exactly that reason. But, I'd also be curious. I was actually just reading the exact same paragraph you did. It's not clear to me how they know what the recent national CNS rate is. Is it of the older measure of pneumonia, or is it this measure? And that's what's not clear.
So it says it's from the CNS Hospital Compare website. This is sentence in four.
But I believe that's only pneumonia, but we can...
So the credit, would it be reasonable for the committee to motion Sandy whether we should table it or not? And then if the majority feels like we shouldn't table it, then we can vote. But maybe we do need a motion. I think it seems like there's a lot of issues going on here.
That's helpful. So all in favor of tabling this, we'll do that at the first level. And if the majority doesn't want to table it, then we'll consider the next step. So all in favor of tabling this, raise your hand, please. Raise it high and hold it high. 1, 2, 7. how many do we have? Okay, so it seems to me that's something that you don't necessarily have. You have a majority, a slight majority, but that's something if you have a substantial minority that feels like they're not sure enough on what they're voting on, it's a reason to table it. So it sounds like that trumps the other considerations. So we will.
I think these are very straightforward questions to ask CMS. The issue is there's been some issue with Oklahoma, and there are some furloughs and things. So it's not an issue of their unwillingness to participate. They were not able to participate, and there's no one from CMS. So I would just feel better having you actually make the assessment with some real information.
And just thinking about all these committees doing this, it is hard to keep the overall reporting burden for all measures in mind, and it seems like that's where the performance gap really is an issue. Only on one measure at a time, it's easy to go over that stuff. So it almost seems like there needs to be some larger process to handle that as well. Okay, next measure.
Okay, we've got the last measure. This is measure 525. This is from CMS, percentage of home health episodes of care during which patients were determined to have ever received pneumococcal vaccination. Do we have somebody from CMS on the line for this measure? Is Katia? She was here with Akizia. You were here with us yesterday. Anybody? They know about it, right? Doesn't sound like it. In many respects, this measure is the parallel measure for pneumococcal vaccination that it was for influenza for patients in the home health community. And whose measure was this to look at? Okay, Jackie.
Maybe that comment I was making for 617 is what I meant for this one. So this is percentage of home health episodes of care during which patients were determined to have ever received. So this implies that they're screened and they receive it if they need it, and then they have ever received it. If that's the case, it would be nice to say that. Other issues. Another is just the level that precision in the document. So in 1C1 you say CDC recommends PCV for Americans 65 years older and those with selected chronic conditions, those between 5 and 64 with selected chronic conditions. This kind of...
So I think that's a larger point that we'll take forward. So things that can inform our vote on this measure, I think, is what we want.
Okay, so their system for grading the body of the evidence, they cite CDC saying that there's limits in the number, but there are randomized controlled trials. So I think that the body of evidence is fair to good. Oh, and then in this measure, they are requesting follow-up for stratifying for disparities. So that's actually a request that they're making. They want guidance on that. And it's all from one data source. Otherwise, I don't have issues with it except just for that sort of rigor in the preparation of the document. Anybody else?
Jason, did you have any comments on this? And we're specifically wondering, is that your comment under the rationale?
About meeting the standard specifications? You raised the issue yesterday that we eliminate people, not episodes. So is that the same issue?
Same issue about persons and episodes.
I think we can deal with that in the same way we're going to be dealing with the immunization. We're going to look, put them side by side and look at the details that you've asked us. You know, we've got the big picture harmonization, but there are little details. And I think clarification that an episode really does represent a person.
would be important in communication for folks.
So this population has a unique data source, and that's probably why it's a separate measure. Any other considerations before we vote? Mike?
There is a comment about 4C1, audit for errors. Because data accuracy could be audited, but they have not done it, apparently.
Okay. Mike?
When I quote the resolution for the one yesterday, that was the same format.
You approved it, but again, it's part of this follow-up where we want to put these smaller details side by side and really evaluate and see if we can get them to harmonize and to Jackie's point about the language so that audiences can readily see they're the same instead of having sort of unusual language that's hard to interpret.
I just want to be as consistent as we can with it. Yeah.
Hi, this is Kazaya Cook from Acumen. I was on a non-speaking line earlier.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us and thanks for speaking up. We've been discussing the measure. A lot of the issues that came up yesterday with the flu vaccination measure are again discussed. I think again using the terminology around episodes is just difficult for, you know, broad audiences who don't have the insider terminology from the home health world. And the notion that we don't immunize episodes, we do immunize people. And so some way of making that communication in the specifications is probably necessary as we expect broad audiences to read this and understand exactly what's going on. Jackie, were there, your other points were just some clarifications in the care of which some of the wording in the document and the characterization of the evidence.
Oh, and the other thing was the developer's request for guidance from the group on the stratification by disparities.
Yeah. I think they're asking for guidance from this group being open, and I would just point out that if you look on page 3 of the submission form, you will see that the data is stratified by race, by age, and by gender. And clearly they're able to do that. I guess, are you guys asking for whether this is the right kind of stratification, whether it should be something different? What kind of guidance is that?
We collect the data to stratify the measure, but the measure as it received time-limited endorsement was not a stratified measure. It would be publicly reported for all home health patients rather than separately for different groups of home health patients. So we collect the data, and we can certainly track the disparities internally, questions whether there's interest in publicly reporting a stratified measure.
I think that considering the discussion of disparities and how important they are and such the high priority, I've got heads nodding all the way around the table that you can't see, we certainly would want to encourage and whatever we can do to get stratified results reported. Yes.
This is David Hill from the University of Colorado. And when this is publicly reported, it's publicly reported as a kind of tiger basis, a home health basis. And are you suggesting that it should be stratified at that level or more at the population level?
I think that's part of our question for the committee is we did find evidence of disparity, what's the appropriate way to address this in the reporting?
I mean, I really think that's up to you to identify whether, in fact,
you have enough N at the facility level. The report that's on the website right now from the Disparities in Cultural Competency Steering Committee would give you some guidance on whether that's feasible. But absent looking at, you know, the individual data for your measure for individual facilities, it's sort of hard to give you any specific guidance. But from the Disparities and Cultural Competency Steering Committee perspective, you know, that paper should be helpful. It's on the web, and Elise, I'm sure, can send it to you.
Now, I can say, actually, right up front, that the N would probably be too small for about 80%.
Right, so I would just look at that guidance, and then, you know, that should you should be able to take it from there.
Thank you.
But the question of reporting aggregate data, certainly those kind of data are helpful in looking where we put our efforts in from policy decisions, so I don't see a downside to reporting that. People ready to vote? So the vote is 10 yeses, 3 noes.
With the recommendation that they define the home health episode to conform with the standards. So they have to define that so we know it's an individual patient episode.
Yes, thank you, Jackie.
You're welcome.
Sorry, I think I missed some of that discussion. Could you just briefly recap what your recommendation was for redefining a home health episode?
The home health episode has to be defined so that it conforms with the standards. So in other words, you have to define the home health episode as that which is involving one patient, because what we are interested in is the immunization for one patient, not for an episode. So you have an episode is a thing. We're interested in the individual patient.
Right. So
we know
what
the...
Can I flip that back to you quickly just so that I can make sure I'm understanding? So for any type of encounter measure, where you're measuring the immunization status of a patient who has an encounter, so a visit to a physician, a hospitalization, if that patient has multiple encounters, is it appropriate for the immunization status to be established during each encounter?
No.
So if a patient is hospitalized, but their doctor previously established their immunization status, they shouldn't be counted in a hospitalization measure of immunization? I mean, that's interesting because, you know, patients can receive home health from multiple different entities. So they might have a home health episode in January with one home health agency, a home health episode in October with a different home health agency.
Right.
The same patient, but they had two episodes.
I think this is another question of harmonization because truly the situation will arise with hospitals for multiple hospitalization, and I think this is an opportunity for additional harmonization, and we can take that conversation offline and kind of see how those line up.
Okay, that makes sense. It's not something that's specific to how home health episodes are defined, though. It's
right.
The circumstance that arises when patients have multiple encounters with a provider type.
Right. Thanks.
So we have one final measure, which is health immunizations, but before we do that, I've asked Rita, since I've kind of lost track of it, what the issues are across these measures regarding harmonization and potentially consolidation. So
okay.
We need to have this discussion.
Of the four measures, one of the measures, the one from Active Health, were concerns about not conforming to the standard specs. So that one is off the table for the moment. If possible, they'll bring us back a revised measure that does conform. What we have left is measure 43, which is the survey measure, which is only for patients over 65 and really is implemented only in the Medicare Advantage programs and asking about patients who received immunization. We have the home health measure we just discussed, some clarification there, and also wording to help facilitate understanding that harmonization is or isn't there.
There were, and then the other measure is the measure for hospitalization, where we've tabled it because there are numerous questions. Some of those address the harmonization issue, and some do not, and some are other questions. So that's where we are at this point. So I think there are enough open-ended questions that those three measures, we'll see what we can, clean up the information.
Yeah, you noted that the flu shot measure was 65 and up, but I just wanted to... I'm sorry. Okay. We're talking not about flu? Okay.
No, we're talking about pneumococcus.
Okay, I'm totally confused. Sorry about that.
Yep.
So it sounds like you have a charge to go forward from the discussion you've had. Is there anything else that would be helpful at this point from us looking across the measures? I didn't hear it either.
I think we need additional information on enough of the measures that we'll need to come back to you to see if there's any further, change in your recommendations going forward before we go final.
So we'll go ahead and do number 38, the last one of childhood immunizations. Then we will open for a public comment, and then we will take a deep breath and just step back and just consider what we've learned from this discussion of the specific clinical preventive service delivery measures, how that might inform our larger work on the developing population health measures. So, item 38.
Michael, I apologize. I don't have the form right in front of me to read it. So if you would just introduce the measure in your discussion, and then Sabine is here from NCQA to discuss it.
Okay, well, you all got a lot better at this morning when I was away. and I also realized I missed some things in my first review, so hopefully I'll pick them up now. So this basically is a measure that NCQA has already been using, I guess has already been endorsed, right, to measure childhood immunization status. What they do is they look at 10 different vaccines that are recommended for kids to be given before the age of 2. They look at kids in their second birthday and who have a second birthday in the measurement year, and they see whether or not they've had the appropriate number of those vaccines, of each of those vaccines, by their second birthday. So for some it may be 2, for some it may be 3 or 1, and so on. But then they report in many different ways. I've lost track of how many different ways. So there's 10 different vaccines, and there's either 2 combinations, or someplace else it says 10 combination rates. Either way, it's a whole bunch of numbers. It's not just one rate, even though it's only one measure. And I frankly don't know which ones it is. I went back to some of the NCQA reports, quality confidence, and there were 9 of them there. So I think that's a big issue, is what is the number? And it seems to me that it would be useful to say, here's the main measure, and then maybe you want to be able to break it out by vaccine types. You want to respond to
I'm
that?
Sorry, I just missed that question. 9 rates, or what?
Well,
combos.
Yes, there are many different rates.
Right.
There are 10 different vaccines and some 2 to 10 different combinations of those.
Right. Vaccines. Yeah, the combinations are there to assist plans and others who are looking at measure rates to trend. Because over time, as more vaccines are added to the immunization schedule, we've added new vaccines, but then you can't trend back with original things. So the combos, usually you have combo 1, then maybe the first 3, then you add the 4, then you add number 5, and all the different combos allow you, if you want to look at specific vaccines, to track it because it is of the way the measure is set up. So that's why there are so many rates.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem. Second,
I'm trying to clarify, there's not one overall measure and then sub-measures. There are multiple summary measures?
There is an overall measure, and then we provide the combos to allow for trending. So the combos take into account the different, all the different vaccines.
So when you look at the quality compass, the one I looked at, the most recent one I defined, there were 9 different measures that were all tracked.
Sure, it's going to come out on that.
I think it's just a
semantics issue. It's all the same measure. So technically, you're looking at 10 different vaccinations, but it's how they're reported out. And the reporting out is what is the trending issue, and that's what's really important for plans. So WellPoint, while we report all of them, we trend combo 2. And, you know, so it's kind of up to the plan.
Right.
But they're technically not different measures. It's all the same measure.
Well, I understand that point. But on the other hand, if I were a consumer trying to compare two different plans, I wouldn't know how to do it because some would look better on measure 1, some would look better on this other measure, some would look better on the DPT, some would look worse on the HIG, you know.
So what's the counter-argument? What's the advantage of having the different reporting?
So the different reporting really, you know, as Sarah said, you might, as a plan, you might decide that you only want to trend the combo that includes X, Y, and Z vaccine. One year, there was a vaccine shortage, and so we did not require HIV, the HIV vaccine. So there's an example where having the other combinations was useful because then you could go to the combos that did not include HIV and look to see what your rates were in past years. So it's really a reporting out issue.
So it seems to me that a compromise here might be to say that the primary measure is so-and-so, and that probably would be the biggest combination, and then say there are these other ways of reporting it for trend purposes.
We could clarify that and make sure that people understand that it is the same measure and it's just a reporting out issue and trending issue.
Well, no, it's not the same measure.
I'm sorry. So the measure is, did you get these immunizations by the time you turn age 2? And the immunizations are aligned with the ACIP recommendation. So it is aligned with the immunization schedules. Whether or not you want to trend back on every single vaccination or you just want to look at, you know, rotavirus plus HIV plus this or that, you do using the combo rate. So I realize it's confusing and I realize that there are a lot of different rates and maybe we could have just provided it on the total measure.
We probably should go four, but I mean, to say that, measure whether you got these 3 vaccines and whether you got these 10 vaccines, they're 2 different measures. Okay. Second, and anyway, either way, I can't figure out from the documentation exactly what's being spoken about. Number 2 is about the contraindications. They exclude a child who has a contraindication to any of the vaccines from the denominator. Now, the issue is the denominator rather than the numerator. So that presupposes the harmonization issue.
This measure, we can talk about whether it needs to have the same harmonization. This is the only measure of childhood vaccination. You may wish to say that maybe globally all vaccination measures of all types should conform, and that's something you all can do.
Yeah, so I don't think this is... I wouldn't worry about that so much. I just want to point that out. But there is, however, I find a sentence in here about that, but I can't quite figure out what it means. An organization that, this is in 2A1.8, an organization that excludes contraindicated children may do so only if the administrative data do not indicate that the contraindicated immunization was rendered. And I've parsed that a couple of times. I don't know what that means, so that just needs to be clarified. Number 3, in terms of the evidence, what they basically do is say, well, the ACIP recommended this and see the ACIP reports. And to some degree, that's about all it can do because there are 10 different vaccines we're talking about there, and it would be impossible to kind of summarize the whole ACIP report. But the point is that we really don't have much of a independent review on that. I'm not concerned about it.
So we've gotten better at this. One of the things we've done is we've focused the initial discussion on things that we think the person's really looking in detail. What are the things that you think we really need to pay attention to that are germane to the overall?
I wouldn't put that in that category. They also, they mentioned adverse effects and say that adverse effects, people worry about it, but it's not a problem. I don't think it's quite that simple, but again, I don't think it's so ever that's a big thing to worry about. The next point has to do with the data sources. And they say here, data source, administrative claims, comma, electronic clinical data, colon, registry, comma, paper records. And so it's kind of an odd mix of things. And they are not any clearer about that later. What they say later is that the data come from HEDIS. And, of course, HEDIS has to come from someplace. So there's really no discussion about that. I guess I don't think that's a problem because, you know, they've worked this out pretty carefully at HEDIS. But I would like to see a little bit more about that before we're really confident about that. I mean, to what degree do they... It sounds like they rely on records rather than recall, patient reports. But that's not really stated here.
Is that true?
Yes, this is not a survey measure. It's based on administrative and medical record data.
Well, but there were some other ones that we looked at yesterday where people were asked to self-report that they've had a vaccine. And
that was flu shot.
Yeah.
That, not this one.
So I think I'm glad to hear that's true. I think that it would be better to clarify that. So I'm not particularly worried about that. But
I think, like Jack, you're raising concerns that we can bring forward and that the NQF staff can bring forward that if you want your measures to have an easier time with the committees, that there are ways to report this. So I think that we can take that as a general point.
I mean, the point here is that we can't set by ourselves the validity and reliability of these data.
Right. So are other things we should consider in the evaluation?
The only point I just want to make is that in the detailed statement of this, they talk about encounters with primary care providers and OBGYNs. And since these are kids, I don't understand why the OBGYNs are there.
I think it's because of the NCH clinics. That's why. But I don't know, because I'm having the same issue in an immunization study that I'm doing right now. And based on that, I also want to ask about these multiple data sources. There's an incredible problem with accuracy when you're using these multiple data sources because they all record in a different way. How is that being addressed? I mean, accuracy, completeness of vaccines is a serious problem. And how are you going to be sure that you have accurate reports? This is a very difficult problem.
Right. Well, the measure was field tested in administrative claims data and also medical record data, and it's found to be a workable measure using those data sources.
So those data sources were interoperable, or they had data that could be reused for this purpose, not formatted in ways that couldn't be reused? Because that's usually the problem.
Well, our HEDIS general guidelines, and I could get back to you on that, outline what to do, you know, using the different data sources. I will say that all of the HEDIS measures are audited and have to pass that bar in order to be reported, and so all of those issues are assessed then.
I wonder if this is one of the issues of it's such an important measure, and any time you're doing something this global, you're going to have messy data, and the question would be, is it the best we can do in this situation? Because it's not an option here to not report it because the data are messy. So the question would be, is it the best that can be done with pulling together a lot of sources that are somewhat messy, but you do the best estimate.
They actually presented their testing results. The reliability scores are quite impressive. So, again, most of these things are charged for, so
yeah.
Claims are there.
Right. So, I mean, I'm not so worried about the substance here. I just think the documentation, we're basically asked to trust that NCQA got it right. Which they probably did. But you know, except for those reliability things that Helen mentioned. There really is nothing in the documentation about this.
And it's really hard. You have so many, you know, such well-established measures, and we were asked to do a lot of these measures in preparation for this to really document all the ACIP data behind all the ACIP data, all the data that the ACIP has come up to do each of the individual immunizations were just overwhelming. So So I think we're hearing from
about the ACIP, and I think that I trust the ACIP, and they cite that, and you know we could go look at it if we really wanted to. Anybody else could, but because they take data from these different sources, as Jackie was saying, and I would like to see more documentation that the validity and reliability really are.
So my hope from this discussion from both what Mike and Jackie have raised for a number of measures is that the staff can take that forward and they're consulting with the measure developers and just give that as hints to them. I think for our work here, we're focusing on are there things that are a level of concern about whether we think that these measures have met the criteria. Jackie? No.
If I'm understanding it correctly, the reliability testing, the N is actually pretty small, so probably the reliability test is from a single data source, which you'd be able to do. I don't know, I mean...
It's clearly given claims-based analyses. Reliability is based on signal-to-noise ratios, and I think that's essentially what they've been able to provide, which is acceptable to us for large data set courses.
So does this N on the first one, the N is 235 observations, correct?
I'm sorry, which number are you looking at?
I'm looking on page 3.
I have a different
1B2, summary of data demonstration.
The N on MCQA measures is typically the number of plans
which
that are reported.
Right. The membership for each of those plans is vast. So these are actually, the reliability was run on the HEDIS measures, and it is a very, very large number, and the reliability was found to be very high.
Any additional issues we should consider before voting on this? Ron, did you want to comment?
Just a quick question. I appreciated the breakdown on disparities. That was helpful to see. And a question I have is, in looking at the data and the differences in reporting, was there any work done looking at, is there a difference between the accuracy, the validity of the data from a health plan versus an individual physician versus a health department versus a community migrant health center? Because I was just thinking, in those settings, you have different potential populations that are being served.
We have the reliability data at the plan level. I will say that we, in prior work we had doing child health measures development, we did also test this measure, even though it is a long-standing HEDIS measure, in physician practices. I don't remember if we had the reliability data run on those, but I can tell you that the performance data was in line with what we see for health plans, a little bit higher for the physicians, which is as expected when you're looking at an individual physician versus, you know, a wider health plan level. So,
Just ready for a vote. Yes, one no. So I think if you're sitting next to one, feel free to pat someone else, feel free to pat them on the back or pat yourselves on the back. I mean, congratulations on doing two really disparate tasks in 2 days here and doing them both very well and with attention to detail and with attention to the big picture, which is a hard combination to do. I think the group process really worked well. I felt like I was pushing us to the point sometimes to get through things where we could have glossed, and I think when I started to get in danger in that direction, I felt like the group pushed back, and I think everyone attended to their own part of the process very, very well in a way that was very helpful in striking the right balance there. So take a deep breath and just reflect back to yesterday afternoon and this morning what we learned from thinking about both the immunization measures and these other preventive services, and think about these two different, these kind of next steps that we talked about in our goals here. Anything, and any ideas that you want to carry forward? And just if we could just not, when you start with any ideas, just don't start the sentence with Sarah. Otherwise, she will probably quit. So it could be just general things that maybe both groups should consider, or if one group mentions a group name instead of Sarah's name. But just any other general reflections at this point. Susan?
Well, I was just thinking about this last thing in particular, the opportunity to develop measures at a national level that could generate calls for appropriate data gathering nationally. So because I'm looking at the state of Texas, you know, we had an immunization database that's going away, and to have something like that be available nationally to develop population-based measures to know exactly where we stand, is, I think it's a really exciting opportunity.
And the metrics for actualizing them might be registries or something like that. Is that what you're thinking? And that it might help drive the establishment of those things?
Not just registries at say, an institutional level, but at a popular, at a community level, having required data collections. I know we collect all inpatient data in Texas, you know, so, and then the ability to extract that data to do actual real measures of health improvement, systems change, that kind of thing.
And there are some states that have tried to do statewide immunization registries, right?
Texas did, but we've lost that. Okay.
So that's a helpful idea to bring forward. Next question? Sorry.
Well, it's related. It's just a reflection about the distinction between these patient-level measures and population measures and what's different about them. And I mean, first observation is that in, you know, the model that we looked at yesterday, we're looking at one small box in that model of population health, which is one contribution of the healthcare delivery system in the provision of preventive services. But when we look at the whole framework, that's a pretty small box in with regard to population health. Looking downstream from there toward outcomes, I think is a big part of our task. So somehow taking all of these patient population specific measures for immunizations, for flu, and rolling them up to ultimately look at how well are we doing in a given geographic area. And you can't just add them together. You need to come up with some sort of registry. And then look downstream from that to look at mortality or morbidity related to this condition is an important step in the work of this group. The other related thought, I think, is that the distinction between sort of people and patients as a denominator. And in the aggregation, if the denominator measure and or episodes even further away from people, if the denominator is NCQA health plan data with people as denominators, it's actually, you can envision aggregating, summing across health plans to look to come up with a geographic population. But if the denominator are hospitals or doctor's offices or home health or nursing homes, patients, you can't add them together because patients don't sum to populations. So I think just off the top, those are two, I think, important learnings from this review.
I think that's very helpful, big picture. If we look instrumentally what we're doing, we said we are going to go ahead with this NQF measurement evaluation criteria and population health measures that has the column starting with NQF current evaluation criteria. We start to think about crosswalking that to population, which is what you were alluding to with maybe there are some where you could actually start to aggregate. But it also, what you're saying is that's a very small box of a larger problem about thinking about population health. And so having a separate work that starts with the population and starts working down through different subgroups, that having those as parallel activities and learning from the differences there, that that's the way you set it up here probably is going to be a useful way to go forward.
I said that without saying Sarah, but it was implied.
Oh, she relaxed and then you jabbed her in the soft underbelly. Ooh. Ron, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wasn't here for most of today's discussion, which probably helped things go more quickly. But, you know, what I grappled with yesterday and grappled with even for the few minutes today are the discussions and the presentation of data and data sources. And so often in public health, we downplay the data that we have because it's not perfect. And we are maybe hesitant to use it because it's not perfect. And so what I see here in the discussions of many of the clinical measures is that there are many of the very same problems with those data sets as we have with public health data sets, and that in a number of instances I could think about, the testing that we did in terms of validity and reliability for some of the clinical measures may not even be as rigorous as we might do for some of the population measures. So I'm thinking as we get into developing measures, we may want to be kind to ourselves about the data and data sources that we use in public health for population purposes, and that granted there's less research done with the data because research, public health systems and services research, has not been well funded in the past. But just because the research may not be research is rigorous, but as much as on the clinical side doesn't mean we should discount the use of those data sources that we have. So it's just something I've been thinking of a day and a half.
And another kind of research way of restating that is that the data on individual patients tends to be really done focusing very much on internal validity and just not really worrying about the external validity. And that could be as big a problem or bigger a problem if you're really trying to make policy decisions or really have some bang for the buck or get some value from investing resources. That's potentially a bigger problem than having data that are good enough but give you that bigger picture about the population. So that's going to be helpful to give us permission to raise our gaze from the usual kind of internal validity standard that we have for research on individual people.
Just to clarify, this is not an unusual thing for steering committees, but I just wanted to in terms of your words, Ron, this committee's not going to develop measures, okay? You're going to evaluate existing measures. One of the things that's going to be critical when we go forward this call for measures is it's likely we will need to approach folks who may not be familiar with NQF or the work that we do. And we are really going to depend on your assistance to help make that contact with those folks who may be out there that we may not know about, because we are moving into a space that just isn't our usual place where we do business. So we will be, you know, searching, and maybe the searching we've done so far, you know, there's just a whole world out there we don't even know is there, you know. So we really are depending on you all to help us discover what may help, you know, what might be out there. Maybe not the usual characters I think we're familiar with, but there's often folks in the private sector or nonprofit sector that are doing some great stuff who, you know, just may not have crossed our radar screen. So we're really going to be depending on you guys to help bring us
bring all these folks together.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what Reva said, is unless the measure comes to us, you know, tested, you know, providing the evidence and is submitted, it doesn't get considered by you all. I mean, just in black and white. We don't develop new things. You could recommend, and I'm sure you will at the end of the day, the types of measures that you would like to see others develop going forward, and that will be very important for the development agenda. But when we get to that February meeting, if the measure hasn't come in, there's nothing really at that point that can be done. So it will really be important for you to beat the bushes for these measures.
And actually, a follow-up to Ron's point, it would be especially important as we take a look at that evaluation criteria. Please take a close look at the reliability and validity requirements. I think they still work, but obviously your insights would be really helpful there.
And again, this might be a question for NQF folks and your staff. You have already been hearing some of the discussions that are going on in terms of guidelines. And, of course, guidelines are much more of an advanced line of business where not really accreditation, but even national guidelines clearinghouse is going to start doing certain things. In terms of performance measures, is NQF will be endorsed measures, that's good. But is it possible to have something like the endorsed measures with saying that, and again, simple way of saying it is maybe some sort of star rating, that this is a one-star measure, this is a two-star measure, a three-star measure, because today what we review with many of the measures, they all, I feel like we're putting them all in one bucket over here in terms of some are better than the others, but we all said yes to all of them. Is it something that's possible? I know it's a long way, and I know we're not, this is, does not fall into this committee's charge and all that, but something, I think NQF is in a really good position, something that I've spoken before as well. It's something we all need to start thinking about. I think the performance measure is a young field, but if we're in a good position, maybe when we'll be doing performance measures, maybe it's not our committee's charge, but maybe we can still go about doing it. We can say, well, we say yes to this measure, but this is a one-star measure or something like that.
It's an excellent point, and actually, when we put these measures out for comment, we put out a great deal of detail. You can clearly see, and that's why the recent Evidence Task Force report moves towards the idea of having not just the single rating overall for importance, but quality, quantity, and consistency of evidence. So I think that was a pretty important step forward. Again, you're fairly early in the overall process, so when those measures go out for comment, people really do scrutinize those, I got pretty moderate to low evidence, and they passed it. I mean, those will get scrutinized, and certainly, when it gets to our consensus and approval committee, they will take a very deep dive on those kinds of issues. We don't currently have sort of a star rating for it, but we do try to at least move it through the process with maximal transparency so people can try to make those assessments.
I'll just add in, this is by no means the first time that sort of question has been raised, and there's been a reluctance for a lot of reasons. Different stakeholders have different needs for measures, and their threshold for what's good enough for their particular purposes is variable. So clearly over the course of NQF's history, you've seen essentially the criteria has helped to establish what that threshold is, and that threshold is moving up, and certainly the most recent version of the criteria that really speak to looking deeply at the evidence, looking at the testing and the results on reliability and validity have moved that bar up so that the two groups of pass, no pass, when applied to measures, say, that we did 8 years ago, you'd have a totally different result. But that's the evolution of this process. So, you know, at this point, we really have just the two, you know, pass or not pass, so a bar that's constantly being pushed up as the maturity of the measurement enterprise continues. And the reason is really our multi-stakeholder audience.
And I'm thinking about the evaluation criteria for these measures. Versus the population health measures. In the evaluation of evidence and the reliability and validity for these measures, a lot of that evaluation is based on the evidence that this measure is related to the outcome of interest. When you're measuring directly the outcome of interest, reliability and validity take on a different meaning, I think. And so that's another nuance with the criteria. And then the second part, just a question for INQF is, just curious if you have, with this huge number of measures for things like immunizations for pneumonia and flu, have you ever been presented with measures of flu or pneumonia?
It's a couple
or mortality.
Of around outcomes. What I did not do to try not to overwhelm you is within the measure criteria are slightly the caveats that apply to outcome measures. So we don't need the evidence, quality, quantity, consistency of evidence if you're talking about an outcome measure. All right? Right. There's something different about it. So we don't apply those criteria. But since all we talked about were process measures, I didn't go there for you and muddy the waters even more. So outcome measures are evaluated differently. On evidence. It would be nice if there was some evidence that you could do something about the outcome, but even that isn't an absolute, because there are many times just outcomes or what people want to know and to track, just to figure out what's going on. In terms of reliability and validity, we still, even outcome measures, and in fact, reliability and validity of risk-adjusted outcome measures takes on a methodological thing that's really quite rigorous and extensive, and we actually pull in statistical consultants to help us understand all of the charts and numbers and things to what are they saying, because it's in a completely different language. So that is an important part of it, and they are done differently, and so our criteria are really appropriate to the type of measure, and with the flexibility that some measures are process measures, but we are really very much moving, you know, have a priority for outcome measures. I just completed a project spring, about outcome measures. And actually, in a portfolio of about 700 measures, I would say right now that 250 of them aren't outcome measures. So it's not that they may not be the kinds of outcome measures that you're thinking about, like long-term death or quality of life. I mean, I think those are measures people talk about really wanting to have. As yet, we're not there. It tends to be things like or 30-day mortality after AMI, or readmission rates. But mortality rates are typically, or morbidity rates, complications after various procedures and things like that. So those tend to be those very clinical and perhaps more short-term. A lot of it has to do with logistics. How do you capture data for something that the outcome is years away from? You know, how do you know who had the X risk factor and ultimately what happened to them? So these are all the kind of things. People talk about them. They would love to have them.
I was just curious if you'd ever looked at influenza or pneumonia.
No, nobody's ever brought absolute rates of influenza and pneumonia, but I don't see a reason why those could not be, because I do believe those are monitored at least in surveillance fashion, correct?
I think part of this really gets at this issue of what's population health. So I think one of the issues has been traditionally NQF has had a level of accountability assigned to an entity. So a clinician, a provider, a health plan, whatever the case may be. It's often difficult to look. Those tend to be, you know, smaller numbers. It's hard to really look at that. But again, as you go up in aggregation, you can start looking at a geographic area. And you know, as we were talking earlier, I think it would be great to potentially get some of those. But then it's at a very different level of accountability. It would be hard to assign accountability to, you know, for example, an individual hospital for the community rates of, it's a shared accountability. Exactly the issue we talked about yesterday.
So for Sarah, I'd just like to say that that's a really good issue, and I think we need to refer that back to the committee that's run by Matt.
I have to make up for my time not being here earlier. I heard loud and clear that we need to find organizations who can put forward measures, who can meet the criteria. And so a question I have, just to further understand and to test an idea whether or not this would be appropriate, is we talked a little bit about tobacco yesterday, and I talked a little bit about tobacco taxation. And so there are a number of studies that suggest that the tobacco tax does impact in a positive way the smoking rates and life, you know, mortality and morbidity. So if there were a measure presented as to whether or not a state, territory, tribe has a cigarette tax above a certain level, and the measure basically then is sort of a yes or no. They either have it or they don't. When I think about the evidence here, the criteria, the validity, the reliability, I think it would meet those various criteria. When I think about the nine aims and trying to put it through the HHS quality aims and looking at it that way in terms of vigilance, proactive, et cetera, I think it would meet that as well. So my question is, would a measure that's relatively simple, which is yes, no, 50 states, is that something that would be appropriate or not appropriate to come before this body?
So Michael Lacera?
So I think that's a good question. I don't know the answer to it, but there's an alternative that rather than saying, do you have what the tax is, maybe you can say something about what is tax, that's a quantitative measure, or something about, I guess, with taxing, that's not an enforcement issue, but there's some other things that maybe how well is it enforced, you know, that could turn it into a quantitative measure. I'm not sure that they really get that what we need, but that's worth thinking about.
I think it's a good question, too, because the other area that we see a lot of this is with obesity and, you know, percentage of school districts that have vending machine laws or stuff like that, which are truly indicators of population health, and they're what the obesity industry is trying, or the industry that's trying to change the obesity rate is trying to do, But yeah, I mean, it's just really hard. And, you know, Michael, regarding your suggestions, you know, I think yes and no gives you a good versus bad, where tax rate, you may not know if that's good or bad, and so those are things that we'd have to think about. But, I mean, I don't, when you conceptualize population health, were you thinking about things like that or no?
I think we felt like we needed to get a read from the committee on what they think are the proper parameters here. I think in some ways those are structural measures, that we have structural measures at the clinical level as well. I guess the question is, how meaningful is it to have it as a performance measure for a state? And that's, I think, really what it comes to. And, you know, going back to the point as well about, you know, mass model in some ways, is that more of a sort of a causal issue, and are we really interested in that? I think Berkowitz has a, you know, number of cigarette packs sold per state. Is it kind of better to maybe think about an outcome or something? I'm just trying to think about, you know, one of the same issues is, well, what's the best measure to look at in that context, and is more of a policy yes, no? I honestly don't know.
Well, so I'll go next, and then Matt, and then Mike. These last few things that have been talked about, I've been thinking about it from a scalability point of view. And I think it shows what might happen when starting from the clinical and going outward, we start from the highest level and go downward. So I could actually envision some of these measures, even envision being measured at a state level, scalable easily to a county, scalable to a smaller geographic community. You could, with the idea that some of what we want to stimulate with these kind of measures is getting multi-stakeholder groups to the table as opposed to just one entity that can do it, but then it's kind of irrelevant for the population. You could actually see getting it down even to the healthcare system level. Okay, what are the schools in your catchment area? Well, there's other healthcare plans. Okay, well then you need to talk to them about it. So starting at that level and then thinking about scalability and so that just looking ahead to what we've decided we're going to do, we have these two working groups that are at least a next step. Who knows if they'll last for very long because these need to interact. But we will have one group that as the next step will look at these kind of framing and scope and developing a model of how we think about measuring population health. And then a group that will be actually looking at how to measure. And both those will be starting with, not starting from scratch, taking some of these ideas, but going and doing an environmental scan going forward. we do have these people that are doing the commission paper, that environmental scan is part of their work. So we need to have these groups asking for what they need. So talking to the folks doing the commission paper, finding out what they found. We'll talk, Elise and I will talk a little bit after this about what the NCREF staff is able to do as far as supporting the work of the committee. We've talked about the NCREF draft evaluation criteria also be something that work that's being done to move that forward needs to be informed by the work of these two groups. What we're talking about is setting up at least some next steps. So Matt and Mike and then Jackie. Oh, this is up again, not a left over. Okay, so Matt, Mike, Jackie, and Sarah.
So one of the things that we've just been talking about isn't explicitly included in your summary, which is, I think, an important part of the conversation yesterday of unit of accountability, and it may not fit in either of these two working groups as articulated, but it's a really fundamentally important question and comes up when you're thinking about a state where the existing measures, it tends to have a very focused definition of the accountable entity. We talked yesterday a lot about that accountable unit might be a multi-stakeholder collaboration. And that's probably not the same as the county or state government. Rather, the group of stakeholders in the county or state that are vested in the improvement of the health of that population. And it may be the combination of health plans and hospitals and doctors and schools and employers and social service agencies, that's a unit, a multi-stakeholder unit, but it's obviously a lot more diffuse and more challenging. But in fact, may well be the right unit of accountability. So I think some work at the front end of thinking about unit of accountability for population measures will be necessary and important, and I don't think it fits in either of these work groups. Maybe it can go to the LA group.
Well, so I think that's exactly it. So I think one of the breakthroughs that we had yesterday, and we need to make sure we convey this fully, I think we committed and discussed we need to fully convey it to the commission paper groups, is they started off with a frame that was starting from a point of view of where you could have a little bit more rigid accountability, which is part of the reason they framed it in terms of healthcare systems and public health systems. And I think the idea that was added during the discussion yesterday was that it could be multi-stakeholder groups, which is quite liberating for the work of this group. So I think that the group should take that idea forward and begin a little bit. You can, as you're framing the discussion, you might take a time and say, okay, now let's frame it differently. Let's start with the end in mind. Who are the users for this? Who is the accountability for this? And that might reframe the discussion. So that idea will need to go forward in the charge to the commission paper, and I think it should be a starting point or something that's discussed fairly early on in both of the groups. But it's a really important idea not to lose. So Mike, Jackie, and then Sarah.
Back to Ron's question, two things. One is measures can be specified so they're dichotomous at the lowest level, but then become continuous when you roll them up. So you might say, you know, what fraction, a school either has a certain anti-smoking policy or doesn't, but you can say what fraction of the schools in a community do, and, you know, or what fraction of county health departments do so-and-so. And that's one way of addressing it. The other thing, a little more general, is that I think to the extent that we can talk about the intensity of these interventions, whether you have it or not, whether you have a program or not, but how much of it you're doing, how well it's working, something like that, if you can capture that in some of these measures, that would be better.
I just got the email that they made the formal launch of the FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, has formally launched the accreditation process. So now there's a bunch of standards, measurement standards that exist, and that might be one place. Some of those might, I'm not saying all of them, but some of those might be candidate measures for this group, and we would have to then define the sponsor for them if it was going to be a community coalition or, but the question becomes like where does the roll-up question, where does the roll-up happen? So do we need collaborations at the national level, say, between the Governors Association and ASCO and the local boards of health? I mean, that's kind of what I'm seeing, is that a group of partners like that would come forth and put a measure, say, a measure of the smoking legislation laws in any given state. And then that would be the measure, and that group would put it forward, but then that group would be responsible for seeing that communities lower down bought into it and made provisions to get the data. So all, just trying to put a practical face on it, that's how, kind of how I see that operating. But then the communities would have something to hang on, but there's going to be some cost involved for data collection. So that's something else I guess you have to think about. Just more conceptual ideas.
So I think my additional comment had been, and I believe we've already talked to LA about looking at the national prevention strategy, because a number of their measures are structural measures, and they are looking at this type of thing. So I think we may want to really take a serious look and consideration for those. And I really think when we're thinking about that determinants of health as well as health outcomes, especially on that determinant side, and you're talking about obesity, who is accountable? You know, is it a parent? Is it school? Who? And so, I mean, it is something we're going to have to grapple with, and that's why I think this group would be a good group to try to start.
I think we should invite some families in that.
So we have Linda, Ron, and Mary. Oh, it's here. Sorry. Oh, sorry, that was Sarah. I thought it was Linda. Sorry, Sarah.
I just want to echo actually what Sarah just said. She's reading my mind. I think the National Prevention Strategy would be a great framework for us to look at as we're going forward with population health measures. And I am pretty sure that tobacco, obesity, and physical activity are target areas in there. And the way the National Prevention Strategy is set up, it talks about what the government can do, what you can do at the community level, at the, you know, employer level. I mean, it's broken down. The thinking has already been done, and I know that there is work going on now to, you know, put some energy into it, and as far as implementation. So, you know, I follow that in my job at HRSA, so I can help be a link to that. But anyway, just as we're going forward, I think that work has already been done, and so we may shorten our work or lessen our work.
So that's a really important point, and it parallels MTF's role. They're not measured developers, but they have this larger role, and this might not be the group that develops the whole approach to how you approach population health measurement, but that takes what's out there and synthesizes it in a way that uses the unique platform of MTF to move that forward. So that's a very helpful frame, and will keep us from reinventing the wheel if we take that to heart. Ron, Mary, and Matt.
Excuse me, just to briefly respond to Jackie, your comment about public health accreditation board standards. I think one of the issues we may have is that many of those standards have yet really to be tested. So there's really not an evidence base yet, which then I suspect would not meet the criteria that we've been talking about for the evidence. Excuse me. And back to the tobacco issue, one of the reasons I pose the question is that I think it's going to be difficult for us to find measure sponsors, if you will, folks who can really go through the rigorous process, spend the time, the energy, the effort, the money to develop the measure and present it. A lot of that, I think, would fall on CDC, and there's only so much CDC can do. Some of it, if we have any workforce measures, might actually fall on HRSA. And so I'm thinking about external bodies, and I suspect if we were to approach the Legacy Foundation and say, you know, Cheryl, who's the executive director there, there could be some national measures on tobacco and some of the policy issues that are so near and dear to the hearts of legacy and our evidence base. Would you be willing to develop them and put them forward? That she probably would, and I think it would be great if we were able to give her enough guidance about what may fly and what might not.
So as I call on Mary and Matt, I'll ask Jason if you would just think about what Ron said in terms of partners and measures developers, since partnerships in your organization's name. If you want to comment on that, I'll welcome it. But first, Mary and Matt.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed yesterday. It sounds like a great discussion that went on. And I was wondering whether you talked about some of the environmental indicators that would relate to clean air, clean water, safe food, toxic sites. Did that come up in your conversation? And there's certainly another whole set of indicators related to all of those environmental standards and metrics.
So only alluded to, and I think that's another thing we can give the charge to Matt's committee. I interrupted you. Do you have more that you want to say, Mary?
It seemed like our frame was staying very close into the medical care side, and so I think if we look at all of the determinants of health that would have an impact on population health issues, we're going to have to broaden that frame.
So you might know which committee you want to be part of, which is right.
Yeah, I'll need to look them up.
We have a big frame. speaking of harmonization, we're talking about the prevention strategies, and I'm just sort of curious about how that harmonizes with healthy people. Healthy people seems like a great frame to start with. I love the last decade version of it, where it had the top of the pyramid, length and quality of life, and disparities. What a great top of the pyramid for population health. Then the problem is that it goes down to 160,000 measures at sort of the next level underneath it, and it's the hierarchy kind of dissipates. But that's a very, I think, useful framing that we ought to rely on. But I'm just not sure about even within HHS how these are harmonized.
They are harmonized, and I can tell you that some of the objectives in the prevention strategy are Healthy People 2020 objectives. So although people love to, you know, tell us that we don't talk to each other in government, I mean, we within departments, we do try, we're aware of all these strategies and try as best we can to harmonize them. But for these two particular ones, they are aligned.
And Sarah, isn't ODPHP coming out with leading indicators in the next couple of weeks, which will then further narrow down?
Yes. The IOM has already released the leading health indicators, and then there's a review process in the department to get them adopted and see if the department is going to agree with or modify them slightly. But yes, that's correct.
It was sort of a I don't know if I want to say this or not, but I actually completed the crosswalk between the National Quality Strategy, the National Prevention Strategy, and where those data sources are. So if I'll put it into shareable format, because right now it's in Sarah format, and could share it with LA or the group.
I think we'd all be interested in that, and don't get perfectionistic about it. We'll just look at it. It's okay. Well, so feel the love and permission to share something early on. Madeline?
I think it was Ron who mentioned workforce, and I'm wondering if we want to talk and think about workforce and numbers in relation to achieving our population-oriented outcomes. It's a huge area, but I think that there are some areas where it has more significance than others, and right now I'm thinking about obviously the growing geriatric population, but I think that we might want to consider what's available and what we know about that. HHS is a good source on that. And that is something that was very closely tied to the recent IOM report on the future of nursing. So when we look at the correlation between staffing patterns, numbers of nurses in schools, people, different kinds of providers, classes of providers in different settings, I don't know if we want to spend a little time thinking about that or asking the people in LA to think about how they might factor in workforce in looking at care delivery.
It also sounds like something that NQF might be able to get another contract from with for outcome measures that relate to medical health care, education for a lot of different things that relates to health, which is going to be on health professionals. Exactly.
Right out of that report and right on the top, on which we really have not made any inroads. So the new documents on professional education, another place where Canada and the UK are far ahead of us.
Right.
So thinking about some of that might be interesting.
Right. Thank you. Jason?
I will respond to your... I had a question first, though, to Helen and to Reva. How aggressive is NQF in reaching out to developers and saying, you know, we're about to... The thing about endorsing these type of measures, do you guys go to people and say, look, please send us a measure, or...
We are as aggressive as we can be, which is why in some ways, because this is a different universe, with the exception of CDC, who fairly routinely submits to us, we would rely on you to help us do that outreach.
They're aggressive about even getting the microphone about this.
So
the only reason is because it's such a standard part. We try and do the environmental scan. Who's out there? Who's doing something more? We have some usual sources, and that's what we're concerned about. Is this what we're looking for now may not be in our usual sources? So that's what we're really going to rely on you.
So I will go ahead and say this, basically knowing that I'm volunteering to lead whatever I'm saying. But going along with what Ron said is, you know, depending on what we decide on, whether it's smoking or obesity or whatever, we should actually, I mean, we could do this. We know all the organizations like Legacy. We know all the tobacco organizations. We know all the, you know, the nutrition and obesity organizations. We know all the physical activity organizations. And we could put together a list of who we should actually go to solicit measures for. So I guess I'm sharing that group is doing that. Or,
so my,
but just absolutely, I mean, this is something we really request of all of our steering committees, but when we're doing the usual stuff, you know, we're talking about the usual folks. This is not the usual folks, and so this is really an important role for you all to play.
I want to thank everybody for going rapidly through. Okay, sorry.
I just have one quick question. Does a group like the National Governors Association, do they have a health committee, or is that a... I was just thinking, we've got the business folks sort of, they were here represented yesterday, but a political organization, if we're looking at...
Well, then I would also include not only them, but CSG, Council of State Governments, and TSL, National Council of State Legislatures, and there's a bunch that have health-related... I don't know how much NGA works with them. I know CSG and NFC and TSL work together.
And part of what we'll do is, as we work with you and develop that call for measures, we'll give it to you in a way that you can send it out to whoever you want. We can have, obviously, it's fully coordinated if you'd like, or also you may just have the contacts on your own you're going to want to send out to. And, again, we wind up doing a lot of technical assistance on our side with the developers, making sure they understand it, which is why in some ways, because we are speaking a slightly different language, as we learned yesterday in a big way, it's especially important that we make sure that those evaluation criteria speak to those kinds of measures. Because otherwise they will get really lost in some of that reliability, validity, evidence stuff, and then they will get scared off. We scare off many mainstream measure developers, but I don't want to scare off others. Again, CDC does work with us very closely. We have, you know, all the HII measures, for example. So we do have a good working relationship with those folks. And I guess one of the real questions is going to be, you know, do we want to go down the path of, this is a bigger issue for all of us, a whole series of the chronic indicators from CDC or things like that. I mean, we just went through this process. Actually, Eva had that test not as well as the child health measure. So we went through a whole series of measures that emerged from the National Children's Health Survey. I mean, many, many, many indicators that emerge from that. The national survey can bring it down to the state level. But again, some of this is also volume. We also want to be careful of not bringing in hundreds of measures if that's not what we want.
Speaking of that, Helen, is there somebody or several people from CDC that you work with a lot that maybe we should use as a resource to help bridge some of those questions or gaps that we have? I mean, since you work with them a lot, they know all the public health, population health stuff.
It's interesting. We do have a couple of contacts, but they actually come from different departments within CDC, the different measures. So it's interesting.
Mike?
I would suggest you probably meet very different people from CDC than you've been working with before. For instance, the National Center for Health Statistics, they've got the Healthy People group that probably is one they'll talk to.
Because this is so new, would it be inappropriate for this committee to sponsor a webinar with potential interested parties? So that is something that, okay, because that might be...
You wrote it down 5 minutes ago.
Okay, for 5 minutes.
I think it's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
As we get the evaluation criteria done and we have the call for measures, it would be great if actually that would be something Jason especially could help us with, get the right folks knowing about it, and we could happily do a webinar to run them through what it looks like.
So that's a nice segue, actually. The two things that we have left on the agenda are to just one more time open for public comment, and then Elise is going to give us a little summary of what she's heard as far as next steps here. So knowing that those are the two things on the agenda, anything else people would like to say here? I'm really grateful for how people were engaged in the initial discussion, how everybody stuck with it, and then we save some time for this. This is like, my children are grown, but sometimes you have, when your children are babies, you know, they're cranky all day, or it's just a tough day, and sometimes you get to the end of the day, or sometime when they're on your shoulder, and then this quiet alert phase, and that's when all the big thoughts and stuff coming out. So I think we did the hard work, and then by getting quickly through the others, we just created this little quiet alert space here. I mean, we're quiet, we're tired, but everybody still looks alert and engaged to me at this late state in the hard work. And I think that's the kind of thinking that becomes part of what we are as a group and that we'll carry forward. So I'm grateful to what you all did to just get to this point and then how you've used that quiet alert space. That's quite a segue into the comment for public comment. So anybody on the line for public comment?
Griffith, does anybody on the line want to say anything? Griffith, are you still there? Griffith.
Sorry, it's our
one. Thank you. I'm going to zone down. Nobody's responding. Thank you. In the room? No one seems to be up.
Great. Thank you very much. I just wanted to go over the next steps. We have quite a bit of work ahead of us. Everyone did quite a lot of work, so there is some follow-up that we have to do. One of the follow-up, the most immediate follow-up things will be the call that we have scheduled tentatively for September 29th and the 30th. And I think we've included this in slides that you've had for the orientation and work group. This will be to follow up on some of the measure issues that we had. There were quite a few recommendations and suggestions that you had for the developers. And so what we as staff are going to do in between that time is follow up with the developers, and they'll also be participating on the call. So if you have additional questions of clarity, they'll be able to address those during that time. Oh, yes, sir.
Do you have a time set for that call? Because my schedule, I'm sure everybody else has filled up pretty quickly. And
yes. Well,
2 weeks.
Yeah, so we were waiting until this meeting to confirm that we are indeed going to follow up. And so either probably tonight or tomorrow, you're going to get a Survey Monkey similar to what you've gotten from us before with some times for either one of those dates. And it will be majority rule, so similar to what we've done. Oh, it is. So the 30th, right? We'll do the 30th. 29th is out. So let us know if you can't do that date, and we can possibly push it out a couple of days. So maybe the first week in October. And then one of the major deliverables that's coming up is the due date for our draft report.
Actually, just on that last item, so I think it will be important to not just have that be just about the measures follow-up, but to be also about the follow-up for these other issues. So it's not reasonable, probably, to have these small groups configured and have met by then, but I think we want to have them configured by the time of the call, and to be able to give a charge to groups about what they're doing. And I wonder if we want people from a commission paper on that part of the call.
And the next slide for phase two has the work group follow-up calls.
Okay. But I would say that I think the call shouldn't be just about the measure of the September 30th. I think we should need to keep the other agenda item on there. I think that'll help us keep people's interest.
So we can do a two-hour call. And so the first part, do the measure review.
She just has it split out by phases.
Yes.
Okay.
And so the draft report will be on our website for member and public comments October 17th through November 15th. And we'll make sure that we circulate it, as Reva and Helen mentioned, to the committee for your feedback at least 2 weeks before. We'll give you some time to review it. And then following the draft report, we will circulate any comments that we receive, and staff will help the committee to draft responses. Any comments that are specific to the developers, we will send to them, ask them to comment on that, and then we will have a conference call where members and public will be there to look at the comments and look at the responses. And then I think that's it. I can't see. Sorry. I'm having trouble looking at the last bullet. Yeah, so we have the comment there. Sorry.
Clear. That all refers to the preventive service measures.
Yes, right? Yes. So phase one, which we're calling preventive service measures. And so this is phase two. This is the discussion that you had yesterday and you followed up with today. And we'll be scheduling those conference calls within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And we'll make sure that LA County is there as well to participate. And then you will be providing feedback to us on the call for measures for phase two, which is the healthy behaviors, and we'll make sure that we have a good exchange of feedback through email. And then the first draft of the commission paper, we're hoping, will be due by the end of November. But this may change. These dates for phase two are not as strict as they are for phase one, so I just wanted you to keep that in mind.
And we'll work to make sure that the work groups stay sort of interdigitated with what LA is doing, so that you don't get a commission paper sent to you in a month or a month and a half that doesn't meet at all our discussions. So we'll keep those aligned.
Can you help us with the work group logistics? And
we'll take care of all that.
Okay. It's not on this list. But
no, we're going to, Kristen and I will handle it tomorrow. We're going to confirm who's on each work group, and we'll work all of that out.
And part of that will be including people who didn't have the benefit of this discussion today, so that there needs to be a way for people to identify with groups. Although I guess we could use the starting groups from last time. So I want to thank Donald for keeping the AV going. The committee of people from NQF, Elisa, Reva, Helen, Robin, Kristen, Nicole, and the man in the blue tie over there who's been transcribing his name, I don't know. But I guess in the NQF staff I should include Bonnie, who has a consultative role but has some history in helping to birth this process, and those who've stuck with us for the for the whole day and the measure developers. So thank you very much, and we're
thanks to Kirk for his yeoman's work today.
Well,
thanks, everybody.
Okay. Thank you.